I just want to say what the goal or the idea of this series is going to be. First of all, I don't know what we titled it, but something like Mo'adim and Shabbos. We basically, what we were thinking was, as Mo'adim come up, so we'd give, 3 to 4 shiurim before Moed, generally. So in theory, we could have done, 3 for Rosh Hashanah, 3 for Yom Kippur, and 3 for Sukkot, but we don't have time for that. So we're going to do just 1 and 1 and 1 and 1. And then when we're not close to a Moed, so we'll learn Shabbos and the most exciting areas of Hilchos Shabbos, of the Melachos of Shabbos. Shabbos is a very, very exciting limud, and there's a lot to study together. Then again, when we get closer to Hanukkah, maybe we'll do 3 or 4 shiurim on Hanukkah and 3 or 4 on Purim. So there will be there will definitely be what to discuss. So this year, the topic is a disconcerting decree. Why is there no shofar on Shabbos? So this year, unlike many other years, it's unlikely that any of us are going to be fulfilling the mitzvah d'orais, the biblical mitzvah of blowing shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And I hope that none of us are going to fulfill it, because the first day of Rosh Hashanah this year falls out on Shabbos. And on Shabbos, this might seem like, obvious to those of us who remember what Shabboses have looked like for a while in Rosh Hashanah, but we don't blow shofar on Shabbos. As a trivia question, how many times, what percentage of the time of the, do you think the calendar ends up that the first day of Rosh Hashanah ends up on Shabbos?
Yeah.
What would you guess? My guess would have been... Right, it's very high. It's very, very high, the amount of time which Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. Right, we have a rule, lo adu rosh, that the Rosh Hashanah can't come out on Sunday, which really means Motzi Shabbos and Sunday, but not on Sunday. The Aleph, Dalet, it can't come out on Wednesday. It can't come out on Thursday night to the end of Friday. So put all that together and already you're at like 25%. There's only 4 days left. And for some reason, Shabbos gets hit a lot with the calendar. So it happens a lot. And Chazal made some decree, which we're going to get into. But Chazal made a decree that when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, we do not blow shofar. So this year, none of us are going to be blowing shofar. And that might, again, seem obvious to us, but 100 years ago in Yerushalayim, they fought back against this gzeira. We'll learn a little bit about that. And someone actually, a big, big Rav, used to blow shofar on Shabbos in Yerushalayim going back about a century. So we're going to figure out why that is. What's behind this gzeira? Why did Chazal take away our mitzvah d'orais? It seems like a tough thing to do. And why recently was there some pushback? So if you jump to source one, we're just going to read the Mishnah together, and we'll already get our brains thinking. So Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah. This is a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the fourth parak. Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yos B'Shabbos. So if the first day or Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, so what would they do? B'mikdash hayu tokin. They would still blow shofar in the mikdash. I'm not going to translate what these terms mean just yet. Aval lo b'medina. But in the Medina, you can translate that as the state, maybe literally, so they would not blow shofar. Continuing, mishachar of Beis HaMikdash. Once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai makes a takanashu tokin b'chol makom, sheyesh bo beistin. Any place which has a beistin, so they then made a takana, you would blow in a place where there's a beistin. That's after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And Amr Abelazar, lo hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai el b'yavne b'lvad. So Abelazar disagrees. He says, no, the takana was only in Yavne that they would ever blow after the Beis HaMikdash. Amr lo echad Yavne ve'echad kol makum sheish bo beis din. And Rabbi Elazar is rejected. No, not just Yavne, anywhere where there is a beis din. So there's a few terms over here which are very vague, which need to be determined in order to understand what's going on. First of all, what's Mikdash and what's Medina? Right? So they would blow in Mikdash, but not Medina. Anyone want to take a gamble on what those two terms mean? Right. Easiest explanation, and the explanation taken by most Rishonim, is in the Beis HaMikdash proper. So they would blow shofar. And if you look at Rashi, Rashi spells this out, but not in the Medina. What's the Medina? Says Rashi. Of a lo b'Medina, lo b'Yerushalayim v'lo b'Gvulin. Not in Yerushalayim and not anywhere outside of Yerushalayim. What's exciting is that the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says, and I've told you this many times, apparently, I haven't gone through all the Perush HaMishnah of the Rambam, but he says, Kvar Be'yanin in source 3, l'cha kama pamim, ki mikdash nikris Yerushalayim kula. Anytime the Mishnayos mention mikdash, that means the entirety of Yerushalayim. Mikdash means Yerushalayim. So they would blow, says the Rambam, they would blow shofar everywhere in Yerushalayim, probably the old city, or I think maybe archaeologists think that Ir David was the old city. I don't know enough about this topic. But in ancient Yerushalayim, they would blow the shofar, Medina Shar Eretz Yisrael. Medina is a reference to the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so that's step one. So maybe we're already getting our minds moving about that Yerushalayim might be different. That's what this Yerushalayim, the Mikdash idea comes out. And then the second question which we have to figure out is, what does it mean a Beis Din? After the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, so any place which is has a Beis Din, so you're allowed to go and blow shofar. Question is, what's a Beis Din? Right? We have many different types of Batei Din. On Erev Rosh Hashanah, so definitely the men, but also many women, will do Hataras Nedarim, and we're all going to, you know, we get three people together, three men together, and they act as Dayanim, and we do Hataras Nedarim. So if I get any three people together in a city, can I just go ahead and start blowing shofar? There's also other types of Batei Din. There's Batei Din which are specifically for capital punishment. Batei Din of 23 people and no less. That's like called a Sanhedrin Ketana, larger Beis Din. So there's different types of Batei Din. That's what we have to figure out. Okay, so that's like background. Those are the things which we want to keep in mind. So what's behind this gzera? So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah in source 4 over here says, so where do we get this gzera? What happened to shofar? So minahani mili, where did we get that the shofar cannot be blown on Shabbos? So Amr Rabbi Levi bar Lachma, Amr Rabbi Chama bar Chanina, Kasuv echad omer Shabbason zichron shua. One pasuk says in Vayikra Chaf Gimel that it's a Shabbason a zichron shua. It's only a remembrance of a blowing of a shua. That's what the psukim say. Kasuv echad omer yom shua. It's a day of blowing. So which one is it? Is there a remembrance of the blowing or is it a day of blowing? Yom shua yelachem. So lo kasha kan biyom tov shechal yos b'shabbos kan biyom tov shechal liyos b'chol. So the Gemara answers, what must it be? This is a biblical distinction that it's only a zichron when it lands on Shabbos. When it lands on Shabbos, it's only something which we remember. But when it's something which isn't, when Rosh Hashanah doesn't fall out on Shabbos, so then we actually blow the shofar. So the Gemara thinks that this is our biblical a deoraisa requirement over here. So Amar Rava, Rava says no, that can't be. Imi deoraisa hi b'mikdash hechi takina. So if it were deoraisa, how could it be that in the mikdash they do blow shofar on Shabbos? If the Torah says don't blow shofar on Shabbos, so why in the base of mikdash are they blowing? And Rava has another question afterwards, but I'm just going to jump over here to what Rava thinks the final answer is. Jumping to three lines before the end of the source, Omar Rava, what is the correct reason for why we don't blow shofar? Midioraisa mishrashari. Midioraisa, everything here is really good to go. You're allowed to go blow shofar on Shabbos midioraisa. The Rabbanan who degazer be'it. And the Rabbanan, the rabbis, were the ones who made a gzera. Why? Kid Rabba. Like Rabba says, Da'amar Rabba ha'kol chayavim bitkiya shofar, ve'en ha'kol bikiyin bitkiya shofar, ve'en ha'kol bikiyin bitkiya shofar. Everyone is chayav to blow shofar, but not everyone knows how to blow shofar. I have no idea how to blow shofar. I've never practiced, but the true, I have tried, but up until the true is impossible. I don't know how they do it. I used to think you just stop blowing, but it's your tongue or something like that. Other people have done it. Okay, well, I should learn. Anyways, not everyone knows how to do it, including myself. So, what's the concern? You don't know how to blow shofar, so you're going to bring it. You're going to have to go find someone who knows how to blow shofar. And what are you going to end up doing? You're going to end up carrying a shofar on Shabbos for Amos in the Rishus HaRabim, right? Not everyone always had an Eruv. The whole concern over here is you're going to take your shofar, you're going to try and find a baki, and you're going to end up violating an Isser De'oraisa of Hotzah. You're going to end up carrying on Shabbos, behind your time of Delulav, behind your time of Demegillah. This is also why we don't shake Lulav or read the Megillah. Yeah, go for it. So why is Yerushalayim any different? So they actually, in Yerushalayim, I don't know that they had an Eruv, but in the Mikdash, they certainly didn't have an Eruv. The Gemara, Rashi explains, in the Mikdash, people are going to be extra careful. There's a fear, you know, we've got all the Kohanim are there, this is the most spiritual place, we're not worried people are going to mess up this one in the Mikdash. Yeah?
Well, an Eruv also only helps so much, like, you can only get so much distance out of an Eruv.
You're saying you could step out of the Eruv.
Yeah.
Right, back then they didn't have, like, whole cities which were surrounded by Eruvin. Like, the Gemara is mostly talk about people with their chatzeros. They had, you know, them and their neighbors, a couple neighbors maybe, or, you know, little, maybe blocks had Eruvin, but they didn't have city-wide Eruvin. That wasn't something which was commonly done at the time. So that's the whole concern. Right, Einshwus Mikdash, exactly. So Rashi spells out Einshwus B'Mikdash, which he also spells out the reason. Einshwus B'Mikdash, the reason we don't have rabbinic gzeras in the Mikdash is because over there they know how to take care of things. No one's going to mess up and do the actual deoraisa problem. Good, so that's the gzera. We're going to get into the fact that this is a little bit of a strange gzera and hard to understand. But before we do that, maybe just I have to admit, there's a lot of exciting Torah over here, so I'll just say it just because I have to say it over here. First of all, if you were to blow a shofar, let's say I'm an Avarian who loves to do mitzvos, so I do the wrong thing, and on Shabbos, I decide I'm going to blow shofar. So have I gotten a mitzvah, or is that not even a mitzvah anymore? I'll tell you a nafka mina. It sounds like it's all theoretical over here. Sfardim only say Shehechianu on one day when they blow shofar. Ashkenazim will say, I think, Shehechianu on both days, but Sfardim will only say Shehechianu on the first day they blow shofar. So the post can discuss, what if someone goes ahead and they blow shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, and they're Sfardi, the next day they blow shofar. Do they make a Shehechianu now on their second day? Or no, they already got the mitzvah on day one, so they lost their chance for Shehechianu. On a normal Shabbos, what Sfardim are going to do this year is they're going to just make Shehechianu on day two. Because you can only make a Shehechianu the first time you do a mitzvah in a long time. But did they already get the mitzvah if they did it on Shabbos? That's
similar to, like, do veg on not kosher. Like,
okay,
do you get
interesting.
Benching if you
ate? Right. Maybe you could connect to benching. The Gemara says specifically by benching on non-kosher that's like chir v'gidduf, like you're blaspheming God to say, thank you so much for this thing you said I'm not allowed to eat. So
I guess really the analogy would be something like chicken and milk. Like something that's
dirabanan. Right, exactly. So if you have something dirabanan, this is where there's a lot of discussion. If you have something which is dirabanan, they said don't do it. Did they just say, okay, it's usher to do it? Or did they actually uproot the mitzvah? They said, this is no longer a mitzvah. That's like where the whole discussion is. So Rabbi Akiva Eger says, you still get the mitzvah and there's no Shehechianu. And others say, no, they actually uproot the mitzvah. There's a Tosfos in Sukkah who says that way. This mitzvah, somehow the Chacham have the ability to make it that you're not even getting a mitzvah anymore. And so if you were to go ahead and blow on your Shabbos day, so the second day you would still say a Shehechianu. That's a whole discussion. And there's, you know, fun nafkaminas, which hopefully never come up because people aren't going to do mitzvahs when they shouldn't be doing mitzvahs all the time. Another very, very just fun marimakom over here is what's known as the Taz HaYadua. There's a whole sefer written by Rav David Cohen of Brooklyn on this one Taz over here, because he finds 98 applications of the idea said by the Taz over here. The Taz HaYadua, the well-known Taz, one of the, you know, not that there's so many well-known Tazes, but this is one of the most well-known Tazes. So what's the Taz's question? The Taz asks, or let me just throw it out there beforehand, we don't play instruments on Shabbos or Yontif. That's a rule. We also aren't supposed to dance and sing, we aren't supposed to dance and clap, but somehow that became more accepted, but we don't play instruments, right? In all of our shuls, we don't play instruments. Why don't we play instruments on Shabbos? Maybe it's going to break, and we all know how to fix our guitars, and you know it's going to lead to problems over here. So that's true both on Shabbos and Yontif. So the question which the Taz asks, and it's not him, the Mizrahi asks it, many Rishonim ask it already, is why don't they make that gzeira for shofar? They should say you can't blow shofar ever because we're worried it's going to break. And you're going to fix it.
You can't really fix it.
So that's what I thought. I thought this is a weird question, right? What? How do you fix a shofar? I
don't. If you tried to fill it in metal or something, it would be possible. Well, the Mishnah says there are a few ways you can fix a shofar, but a lot you can't, but some you can. Like, sort of can.
Right. There's like these different ways of filling things, holes. So if you would ask me, the answer is they weren't worried you'd know how to fix a shofar. That's what I would have said. But apparently I'm wrong, because many, many people are bothered by this question who must have known how to fix shofros, or they wouldn't have had the question.
Yeah.
So they all ask, well, so then why can't we, why don't we say shofar is always usser on Shabbos or Yontif, which always happens to be on Yontif, because maybe you're going to end up fixing it on Yontif. That's the question that they're all dealing with. And there's many different answers given to this question. Would they really do that? So the Taz says exactly that. They wouldn't ever do such a thing. If the Torah says there's a mitzvah, Chazal do not have the ability to totally get rid of that mitzvah. If the Torah says there's a pasuk which says you're going to blow shofar, they can't say you're never going to fulfill that mitzvah. They can say when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, okay, you won't do that. But they have to enable the pasuk to exist in some form or another. They can't uproot the mitzvah in its entirety. And there's different reasons given for that. You know, I think probably the simplest is that it just looks like a joke. If the Torah says, go ahead and do a mitzvah, and then Chazal go ahead and they say, don't do a mitzvah. So that doesn't work. And I'll give you another example. The Taz says, why do we do Mila on Shabbos? So since this is being recorded, I won't say the story over here, which happened with the recent Mila on Shabbos, but I don't know if everyone knows. There's a fun with... Anyway, it's fun if in certain places. Okay, so what? We're worried about caring. We're very, very worried about caring. So the question which everyone asks is when Mila lands out on Shabbos. Everyone know what I'm talking about over here? There was a rabbi, a very, very great, incredible rabbi in Rebbetzin who slept over for whatever reason. Okay, so...
there's some people who feel very strongly about the Eruv. So then, I mean, that is what it was all about.
That's correct.
Because the Noah is a warrior person and they take that very, very, very seriously.
I didn't say any of this, just... No,
it's
not even
like a compliment to the guy.
Yes,
he's
yes, it is.
He's a very serious, upstanding person, and he makes conditions that blah 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 because that's because he feels that he doesn't want to be involved in carrying his tool.
100%.
Blah blah blah, and it's. I think it's to his credit. I don't think it's an embarrassing story.
I don't think it's embarrassing either. I just didn't want to reveal anything which wasn't supposed to be revealed. So, no, don't worry. Nothing's been revealed. You're good to go. So, anyways.
Nobody
would
yell at Frida.
What?
No.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
But I have a question for everyone here. Shofar, we're not going to blow because we're worried you're going to carry it. So, why don't we say you don't do Mila on Shabbos because we're worried you're going to carry? If there's such a concern you're going to carry... Through Mila, you're going to carry, I don't know, the baby, you're going to carry the knife. You're going to carry something.
Isn't that like a whole Gemara about carrying the knife on rooftops?
Yeah.
Like for Mila?
Right, so there's a whole parak of Rabbi Eliezer de Mila about how you're allowed to go, it's a machlokas, whether you can, Mila is docha Shabbos, you're allowed to do Mila on Shabbos even though it violates a malacha. Rabbi Eliezer thought you could even do anything which was a preparatory step for the Mila. So I could chop down a tree on Shabbos to go and sharpen my knife or whatever. For the Mila. But the question which everyone asks is, why didn't they make a Gzera here? Why didn't they say no Milas on Shabbos because of Gzera Derabah?
Because it's too important.
Because it's... Right, so it's the 8th day, but still, couldn't you... You could still... We still mekayim the 8th day on, you know... we could do it the next day and do it on the 9th day and no, still get the mitzvah of Mila.
Because in this case, the mitzvah of Mila, specifically being on the 8th day, is more important, more dedicated to the mitzvah. Like in here, especially with Rosh Hashanah, which is the one chag, which is 2 days wherever you are, you go and take the shofar. You're going to be have another day when you can blow the shofar.
Right.
The lower is a little trickier, but for the most part, I think they abandoned fairly quickly the idea that you don't take lulav on Chol HaMoed. So you would also have another opportunity to take the lulav. The Mila, you're losing out on something big in the mitzvah if you don't do it on the 8th day. If you can't, then you don't. But
aren't you losing out on something very big when you don't blow Rosh Hashanah? You just miss the whole mitzvah that day?
You are on Shabbos in certain cases.
Right, that's true.
The baby's health, if the baby is jaundiced.
Right, jaundice or other. Correct. If it's not a natural birth, then we won't do a meal on Shabbos. That's correct. So there's a bunch of exceptions, but I'll tell you what the Taz himself says is that there's a drasha in Masechah Shabbos which tells you do Mila on Shabbos. That's what the drasha says. Bayom Hashmini, I think the word, either Bayom or Hashmini, I forget which one, but one of them's extraneous in the Pasuk. So we learn from there that you do a Mila on Shabbos. That's the drasha d'oraisa. So when you have a specific drasha teaching you something, you can't uproot the drasha in its entirety. Meaning it's not just that we can't uproot an entire mitzvah, but if you have a drasha which tells you do X, Chazal cannot uproot the entirety of X. So the drasha says you do Mila on Shabbos. If they said you can't ever do Mila on Shabbos, they would be uprooting the Torah. So that's the Taz Hayadua, and David Cohen has, again, 98 examples of this, which he thinks, you know, again, it's not like there's 98 examples in our lives, but 98 places in Shas, Tosfos, Rambam, you know, someone who said something which you can explain based on the Taz Hayadua. So that's this fun piece of Torah. I gave it to you in Source 5 if you want to take a look. Okay, so where's the pushback come from? How did 100 years ago a very big, important Rav who we'll get to shortly blow shofar on Shabbos? So if you look in the Rif, who's the Rif? The Rif is Rav Yitzchak Alfasi. He is from Fez, Morocco. And his job is just to quote all the Gemaras which are halacha lamaisa. He is just copy-paste Gemaras for the most part. Once in a while, he'll leave a little comment. But if it's not relevant nowadays, so he doesn't quote it. So all of Kudshim, all of, Zrayim does not anything in Zrayim. Anything which isn't relevant lehalacha nowadays, he doesn't quote. That's his rule. So comes along the Rif, and the The Rif, we're not going to go into the details, but the Gemara discusses what exactly are the details of this Beis Din, which we referenced earlier, that when they had a Beis Din, they would blow shofar. And the Rif quotes all the text. So I gave you the text. We're not actually going to read it. But he quotes all that text about which Batei Din, certain rules for the Beis Din in order to be able to blow shofar. And the Bala Maor, who's Rav, someone, Zrachia, I'm blanking, Rav Zrachia Halevi, so his whole job is to go and basically say, I disagree with the Rif. That's what he does every single time. And then everyone else says why they disagree with the Bala Maor, and that's how you have, you know, a nice, lively discussion. So the Bala Maor over here gets very upset. He says in source 7, HaRif Zal Kasav B'Hilchosav, the Rif Zal quotes in his Halachos, and he quotes the whole Rif, V'lo haya lo lichtov ze haklal. He says, I don't know why the Rif is quoting any of this, because when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made his takana, he only made it in a place where they have a Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin means the Beis Din of 23 or 71. Bein b'Sanhedrin gedola, bein b'yavne, bein b'Sanhedrin ketana. Whether it's the Sanhedrin gedola, yavne, or Sanhedrin ketana, a Beis Din of 23. You only have a Beis Din of 23 when you do capital court cases. And since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we do not ever do capital court cases. It's not happening. So he says, I don't know why the Rif is quoting these Gemaras at all. Ve'achshav ein lanu, switching to the next page, Sanhedrin lo gedolov lo ketana. We have none of these. Ve'ein shum malkum b'Yisrael shetokim bo b'yom tov. There's no place in all of Israel and anywhere in the Jewish communities which they blow shofar on Yom Tov shal Rosh Hashanah shechal yos b'Shabbos. V'zeh echad min ha-makomos ha-matmim ha-nimtzayim b'halachos. This is one of the places which is shocking in the Rif. The Rif was, you know, very well respected. The Baal Mor is saying, I don't know what to do with this. It's weird the Rif, you know, didn't think, oh, all this goes in the not quoted section of Gemara. So all the Rishonim answer that the Bala Maor, who, you know, I guess, however he missed this, he missed a piece of the Masorah which was transferred from the Rif to everyone else. And that was that the Rif actually was blowing shofar in his communities. In the Rif's communities in Fez, Morocco, he was blowing shofar. The Sefer HaChinuch quotes this, the Rosh quotes this, the Ramban quotes this. Everyone knew about this, but some, they were on Shabbos. On Shabbos, the Rif would blow shofar in his community. And why? So there's different explanations in the Rishonim. If you look at the Rosh in source 8, third line, Amru Allah Rav Alfazal, Shayat Okeh B'Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yos B'Shabbos. He, in fact, would blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, which fell on Shabbos. V'chein Mashmah B'Yolchosav, Shehedi Meimrad Rav Huna. That's why he quotes Rav Huna's statement, which is about the Beis Din. V'im Beis Din, V'ein Darko L'Hav Yol Adavar Anoi B'Zman Azen. He only ever quotes things which are relevant nowadays. B'lo Nahagu Talmidav Acharav Lasos Kein. So although the Rif did it, his Talmidim, his students, never really followed suit. So why did the Rif do what he did? The explanation given, which probably makes the most sense, but there's different explanations given, is he thought all you needed was a Beis Din of three people. He'd get together, the same way we do a Taras Nedarim, get three Joe Shmoes together, sit them down in a seat. As long as you have a Beis Din sitting, you're good to go and blow shofar. Now why would that be? What's the whole idea of this whole Beis Din thing? It's the same idea when you have a Beis Din, so people don't mess around. The Beis Din's there to make sure that people are keeping the halacha properly, they're sitting, they're watching. So it makes a lot more sense in a place with 23 or 71, you know, the really chashuv Beis Din. But the Rif thought, as long as we get three people, sit down, and basically, you know, make sure this Rosh Hashanah, we're good to go, we're acting properly, so then we're not going to have, we're going to be able to blow shofar.
Are there other times like Gemara that differentiates between a Beis Din and a Sanhedrin? The Baal Mor took that Beis Din text to be obvious.
Right. I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not sure. The Baal Mor takes it as like a Dover Pashut. Like, it's not a question. Of course, it only means the Sanhedrin. If you think about it, it makes sense. Like, the fact that you could just get any three people to sit down and say, right, well, now we're good to go, you know, is like a little surprising. But he's also following his minhag, and he'd never heard of anyone who blew shofar on Shabbos. Yeah.
Not necessarily. That's surprising. I mean, the whole idea behind it was that the Beis Din were the people who were educated, who would know how to take care of these laws and have the authority to do so. Now, as time went on, more and more people would have the education necessary to know what you can and cannot do and what you, and would be able to at least enforce something like this. Be able to say you can't bring a shofar to shul if you're going to blow it on Shabbos.
Right.
Like, right. It has to be there for Shabbos.
Yeah, I hear. It's a good point. So,
I don't know, but there's a lot of people nowadays that wouldn't know what to do.
So. I mean, I agree with you completely, but
they would never be behind the shofar blowing if you needed, even if you used it as a shofar.
You're saying
on Shabbos.
Right, they'd have to do it, I think, near the Beis Din. That's part of what the Gemara discusses, how close to the Beis Din you have to be. Right, they wouldn't be doing that on Shabbos. Right, they would do it just close to the Beis Din so that no one would be making any mistakes. Okay, so it comes along Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger. I'm not sure anyone has ever heard of his name before this year. I hadn't really. This is like what he's known for. This is he did a lot, so you know, he just happens to be when you don't write so much, so over time you lose your name. But this rav was big stuff. I gave you a nice picture over here. He's born 1837. He dies 1922, and he was raised on the philosophy of the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer writes, actually, we have a letter from him where he says, "I did the Mila and the Pidyon HaBen." It was one other thing, the Mila and something else for this boy, Akiva Yosef, where he's talking about him. So, but the Chasam Sofer dies when he's two. He has a very strong emotional connection to him. And he ends up learning from the Chasam Sofer's son, the Ksav Sofer. And he adopts the philosophy of the Chasam Sofer in full. And he's actually the one who popularized the phrase, Chadash Aser Min HaTorah. So the Chasam Sofer's mantra of new things are Aser, fighting the reform movement, that was the doing of Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger. So he loves Eretz Yisrael. He eventually moves to Eretz Yisrael, and longing for the Beis HaMikdash, he actually rents an apartment in Yerushalayim. I'm sure the rent then was much cheaper than it is now. Well, yeah, back in those days. I'm not even sure what it was, probably pennies. In 1871, the year after he makes Aliyah, he says, "I think we should start blowing shofar." And he tries to get the rabbis to do it, and they don't really listen to him. So he works a little harder. He punches a hole on Shabbos. Sorry, 1871 was a Shabbos year. He tries to get them to blow shofar on Shabbos, and they basically don't listen. So he writes a whole pamphlet, a whole long kuntras on why he thinks that we should be blowing shofar on Shabbos. And it doesn't pick up steam until around until the years 1904 and 1905. 1904 and 1905 were both Shabbos shofar years, and he really rallies rabbinic support for his idea. And he claims that he has the Aderis, who we have other witness testimony. The Aderis was the son-in-law of Rav Kook, I think, or the father-in-law of Rav Kook. Aderis was a big gadol, and Rav Shmuel Salant, the Rav of Yerushalayim over there. He has a lot of people on his side. And his basic arguments, you know, we can put them together, are really just three arguments, which we've noted. Number one, the Rif blew shofar on Shabbos, wherever you were, as long as you have a Beis Din. So let's sit down, we've got a bunch of big rabbis, let's put together three rabbis over here. Doesn't even have to be rabbis, but let's put down three rabbis, make a Beis Din, blow shofar. Number two, we have the Rambam. Remember we said, what does it mean to be in the Mikdash? So the Rambam said, anywhere in Yerushalayim counts as the Mikdash. So he said, look, we got the Rambam on our side. He says, and you know what? You might tell me you're not sure. You're not sure if this is enough reason to be Mekil or to be Machmir. He says, well, what are our rules? We have a rule, if you have a Suffolk, so what's the rule? Suffolk Durabanan goes Lahaka, right? If I have a question on a rabbinic decree, so I can be Mekil, I'm allowed to be lenient on that. And what's the rule by Suffolk Deoraisa? So we have a suffik on a deoraisa to blow shofar. You should be machmir and blow. Suffik on the derabana not to blow shofar. You should be mekil. And he said, we should be blowing shofar. Apparently the aderes was very old and was worried he was going to die very soon. And he knew in 1904 that next year would also be a Shabbos Rosh Hashanah. And he was worried he wouldn't get the mitzvah of shofar. So he hid behind a wall while Rav Akiva Yosef Schlesinger blew shofar, because he didn't want people to think to blame it on the Aderes, but he also wanted to hear it. So people saw him hiding behind the wall. That's how the story goes. And then another one of his arguments was that Russian Jewry apparently was suffering a lot of pogroms at this time. And he said, we know that the shofar does incredible things for us. We should try and blow shofar. Okay, so he did it. He did it in 1904. We think he did it in 1905. He blew shofar more than once. And since then, basically, no one has... What? The Aderis actually did live past 1905. I think he dies in 1906. So Aderis lived for, I think, one more Rosh Hashanah after the Shabbos Rosh Hashanahs. But that's the story. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's like a very nice story. Yeah, go for it.
Well, just in terms of the Rambam, even if the Mikdash is defined, including Yerushalayim as well, does it still fly after the Mikdash was destroyed? Or is he just interpreting how it was back when the Mikdash?
It's a good question. He's interpreting what it was when the Beis HaMikdash was standing. It's a good point. So why? I guess he just assumed that means they never made the Gzeira in that place. Happens to be once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed and no one's in Yerushalayim, it's not relevant. But his assumption was that still in Yerushalayim we could always blow according to the Rambam. Yeah. I don't know. There probably were, considering how often it comes up. It's like this year it's like 30% of the time. So very, very likely. So I'm not sure what happened in between. I don't know if the rabbis, you know, shut him down or what happened, or if he just didn't make such a fuss about it and just did it kind of quietly, not so quietly, because it's a shofar and hard to do that too quietly. I'm not sure. So that's what happened. That's the fun story. And it kind of leaves us with the question, which I think nags me at least, is like, why did Chazal do this? You know, we've got what I call a disconcerting decree. You have a mitzvah deoraisa. Let's put together all the issues with this gzera over here. Mitzvah deoraisa, we get to do once a year. When you're doing it on day two, you're not getting the mitzvah deoraisa. You're getting a rabbinic mitzvah to blow on day two. You should definitely do that. Highly recommend it. But this is not the biblical mitzvah when you blow a shofar on day two. They uproot it 30% of the time. Mitzvah deoraisa. Not only that, you look in source 9 over here. What does Rabbi Yitzchak say about the importance of shofar? I'm Rabbi Yitzchak. Kol shana she'ein tokin la b'tchilasa. Any year that they don't blow shofar at the beginning of it, mirin la b'sofa. They end up crying about it. Things go bad at the end. My time adoli arbiv satan. You weren't able to go and confuse the satan. The satan somehow is impacted greatly by the shofar, and you didn't do it. I remember reading Rav Steinman's biography. I didn't finish the whole thing, but there was a time where I was reading through it. But they said when he was in, he was hanging out around the time of the Holocaust in 1940 when things were really getting bad, and he had a whole chevre of people who were like in hiding, and they had an expert shofar blower and a shofar which he practiced on, and that Rosh Hashanah of 1940, the expert shofar blower couldn't get a sound out of it, and they passed around the whole room and no one could blow the shofar. And they all remember thinking this is going to be a very bad year for the Jews. That was like, anyway, lo and behold, it was. But that was just like, after I was reading these stories, I understood why they thought that because of this Gemara over here. Anyways, that's issue one. So it's a very important mitzvah. It's a mitzvah deoraisa. And what's the big concern over here? Where were you going to carry in Rishus Harabim? So let me ask you, is how many Rishus Harabims do you think there are? How many, you know, how often does a Rishus Harabim come up? Why? Why a lot back then? What are you thinking? Good. So what? Right. What's the definition of Rosh Hashanah? I'll tell you. In Manhattan, so the many people on this side of the community, Breuers, will not carry in Manhattan. Is that because they think Manhattan is Rosh Hashanah? You'd think the answer is yes. I mean, they think that you can't make an Eruv. Right? Background over here. In order to make an Eruv, you have to first think it's not a Rishus Harabim. I can only make an Eruv in a place which is not a Rishus Harabim. If it's a Rishus Harabim, you can't make an Eruv. That's the basic rule. So anytime we make an Eruv, that's because we're making a statement. We think this is not a public thoroughfare. Now, where do we get that from? So it's because there's like 10 different factors which need to come together in order to have Rishus Harabim. The way that we paskin, if you look in both the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, so Ezu, source 10 over here, Ezu Rishus Harabim. So what makes the Rishus Harabim? It goes through a whole bunch of conditions. V'yesh omrim shekol she'en shishim ribo ovrim bo b'chol yom. Some people say that if you don't have 600,000 people passing by this area every day, ain't a Rishus Harabim, and it's not a Rishus Harabim. So here in... Manhattan, right? So you'd think Manhattan would be a pretty good example.
But that's the home of
Israel. What? Right. So it has to be within a certain. So how many places we can get into Manhattan another time? That's a very important shir why we think it's okay to carry here at Mount Sinai. If you think there are 600,000 people over here,
it's a very small piece of Manhattan.
Right. There's a small piece of Manhattan. Again, a very good question. But let's just zoom out of Manhattan, forget about 2023 for a moment. How many places do you think there were which had 600,000 people passing by it?
Probably not a lot.
There were probably like zero. I don't know. it's almost like hard to fathom how you could ever have a Rosh Hashanah.
Maybe in China.
What? Maybe in China there was a Rosh Hashanah. You look in the... not back then. Even in China. Well, I don't know. I'm not even going
to...
Right.
That's where this
so you have to have
like,
a.
Like, wait, as soon as they get into Israel and aren't just in the
Right, right. So that would be the way that we pass. Can you look on? Look at source 11 and source 12. 11. V'hashtad aleislan rishus harabim gamu. Says the Shulchan Aruch, nowadays that we don't have any rishus harabim. I don't know why he says nowadays, but he's saying because we don't have any places which have 600,000 people. In the times of Rav Yosef Karo, they didn't have any place which had that kind of density. You look at the Ramah, right? This is Rav Moshe Isserles for the all of the Ashkenazim here. Afilu bizman hazed deleislan rishus harabim. Now, even nowadays where we don't have any rishus harabim, these places don't exist, is what they're saying. So post can try and figure out, okay, where do you have rishus harabim? Maybe interstate highways are always considered rishus harabims, no matter how many people are there. That's what some post game suggest. Nowadays, you could come up with an argument that, let's say, Manhattan or Brooklyn, a few cities, I'm sure China throughout, you could get to 600,000. It has to be within a certain area also. So it's not like just, oh, we'll call all of Colorado, you know, one place, and now you have 600,000 people. There are 600,000 people in Colorado. Yes, we have a few million, I'm sure. But it's very hard to come by. So what are Chazal worried about? That they are telling us, don't blow shofar on Shabbos because maybe you're going to carry it in a Rishus Harabim. Again, if you carry it in, let's stick over here in Manhattan. I'm going to give you an example. Here in Manhattan, so the reason the Breuer's community doesn't carry is because of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe writes in his tshuva, I don't think this is a Rishus Harabim, but I'm worried people are going to get confused and think that you can carry without an Eruv. His big concern was in a big thoroughfare, he had a Rashba, a big, big thoroughfare, even if it's not a Rishus Harabim, you can't let people ever carry there because people are going to think you're allowed to carry without an Eruv.
Did they actually consult with him to find
people? Yes, they did. They have letters across the street is the, is what shul? I forget the... Dumbrov, exactly. In Dumbrov, they have a nice sign from Rav, signed by Rav David Feinstein saying Rav Moshe was talking about Washington Heights. Also,
but that's Dumbrov. I thought you were talking about Warriors.
No, but I'm saying they're all, it's the same question here of Washington Heights. But he, even Rav Moshe Feinstein, doesn't think that Manhattan is a Rishus Harabim.
Right.
So the whole concern, even if you were to carry over here, you'd be violating an Isser Dirabanan. You would not be violating an Isser Dioraisa. Uh-huh. This whole concern only makes sense that they're going to tell you not to do this lest you violate something. Only makes sense if they're worried you're going to violate an Isser Dioraisa. And it is really, really, really hard to come by this Isser Dioraisa. So what were they doing? So I'll tell you, this question bothered people so much. One person so much, at least, Shut Tar Lishma. I gave a background to who he was in a recent shir, so I went to it again. But I ran into my second Shut Tar Lishma, I think, of my life over here. This is the Ben Ish Chai, who wrote this whole sefer under a pen name, hence Torah Lishma, Torah for its own sake. He didn't want any credit for him, and signed every single tshuva like I didn't put on the end of the source sheet, but Yechezkel Kachli. That's what he named himself. And then eventually we figured out that doesn't actually make any sense, that this is someone from the 1600s, as he claimed. He claimed he found an old manuscript, but he was quoting things which didn't exist at that time yet. And then we found correspondence between him and other people. So we said, this doesn't make any sense. And then his grandson, who published the Sefer, said, yeah, it was really written by my grandfather. And you do the gematria, Yechezkel Kachli is the exact same thing as Yosef Chaim, which was the Ben Ish Chai's name. Yosef Chaim of Baghdad, he was, you know, hinting to himself. But he didn't want any schar, he didn't want any fame from the sefer which he was, copying. So he gave it the name of someone no one had ever heard of, just to put out his Torah thoughts without giving them too much credit. Very interesting idea. But anyway, he has a question, which is, why did they do this? And we're not going to read it all together, but just the bold part over here, what he calls the tshuva, Rosh Hashanah shechal liyos b'shabbos she'ein tokim, imkin eich na'aseh l'mala kol hatikunim. How are all the tikkunim, he's a Kabbalist over here, how are all the tikkunim, whatever great things are happening in heaven going on, how are those going to happen if we don't blow shofar? And he goes through the issue, and there's so many reasons why this gzera doesn't make any sense. And he says over here in the tshuva, here in source 13, tshuva hatam deshemayavirenu arba amos b'shus harabim. Sorry for all of the acronyms over here. But the reason which is given in the Gemara of lest they carry four amos b'shus harabim, lo amru raboteinu zichron livracha, elu bishvil lasos tam Pshati v'nigle l'gzera sam. They only did that to go and give a reason which, makes sense based on nigla, which makes sense based on, non-Kabbalistic ideas. Lifnei hamon Yisrael, for the hamon am, for the average person, k'desh tiskabo gzera sam etzal kol adam. They did it so that their gzera, their decree would be actually accepted. But that wasn't the real reason behind their takana. Their real reason, he goes on, and I didn't understand it exactly, but he said Shabbos basically covers the tikkunim which are made through Rosh Hashanah. There was just no need for a shofar on Shabbos. And he basically gives a Kabbalistic explanation and says, a very interesting line. We don't need to read it inside, but he says, okay, so then why are they blowing in the Beis HaMikdash? Why blow in the Beis HaMikdash if we don't need it, if whatever is you're trying to accomplish through shofar is really accomplished through Shabbos?
So can apply in the Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
So none can.
Right, exactly. Meaning what he says is, at the end of the day, we told everyone it's because of carrying. And once we tell everyone it's because of carrying, so we can't maintain the Xer in the Beis HaMikdash, or everyone's going to kind of get confused and say, wait a moment, you shouldn't be concerned about carrying in the Beis HaMikdash. No one's going to carry in the Beis HaMikdash. So they said, okay, fine, you can blow shofar in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. But a very interesting, whatever, that's we can hold off on the Ben Ishchai, but I'm just pulling out over here. He was so convinced that this could not really be the reason for the Xer. It's so hard to understand that this is the reason for the Xer. So I'll tell you one idea I was speaking with my wife Nechama.
He's saying the rabbis can just decide like this mitzvah, we don't need it, so let's just not bother.
Look, I'm not holding in Ben Ishchai and Kabbalah so much, so I don't feel comfortable defending him. I'm sure that someone could do a much better job. What he's saying is sometimes the gzeira, which they say, is really for much deeper reasons than what is actually written, and then they kind of tell everyone something so that they don't, it couldn't have been understood by the Hamonam. It wasn't something we would have been able to understand without our Kabbalistic knowledge.
What was his deeper reason possibly?
It's basically irrelevant because I don't understand it, but somehow Shabbos, the fact that it's Shabbos makes up for the fact that we have a mitzvah shofar. Whatever would be accomplished through shofar is already accomplished through Shabbos. Okay. Something along those lines. Yeah.
Hang on a second. If I understood you correctly,
you still have a problem with carrying, but it's dira abana. If you carry without an eruv in a place you think you could make an eruv, you're only violating a dira abana. Again, I'm not recommending this. We don't violate dira abanas either. But if you carry in a place where you could have made an eruv but didn't, you should make an eruv. I agree with your face, but.
If you think it's intermediate, then you can make an eruv there. But let's say you didn't make an eruv and you carried there anyway, it's only darbanan to carry there because it's not actually public. It's only
Sorry for the complication. I'll just finish with one thing just so that we can wrap up with if anyone has any questions, and then I'll also let people get back to anything they have to do. I was speaking with Nechama, my wife, about this, and she just had an idea. I thought, I'll give you food for thought. I just thought it was so great. She said, maybe what the reason is that everyone thinks in the Gemara, you get the feeling that what a shofar is it's like this charm. If I blow shofar, then all the gzeros rose, all the terrible decrees are going to get ripped up. So you could end up getting people to think that, the goal of shofar is just, it's a lucky charm. We blow shofar and then we're good to go. But what shofar really is, maybe that's a part of it, that might partially be true. But shofar is also, it's a reminder to do tshuva. Wake up call. All of Elul, we're blowing it to remind us we're trying to do tshuva. On Rosh Hashanah, we blow it because we're coronating the king. We coronate the king back then. The way to do it was to blow shofars at a coronation.
Right.
We're being mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Right.
So maybe in a very ironic way, by telling us not to blow the shofar, that the shofar, we don't actually need this lucky charm.
Uh-huh.
It might actually remind us about what the real goal of the shofar is. Yeah, that is good. That's why I'm quoting it over here. My wife knows what she's talking about. So by taking away shofar, even though you're right, the decree doesn't seem to make much sense. But maybe without any sod, without any Kabbalah, the idea was to hammer home that shofar, the message of shofar, it's not a charm, or it's at least not only a charm, and it's not just an end, but it's a means to an end, and we have to all do tshuva and recognize that we are here to go and serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And with that, I wish everyone a successful Shana Tova. Happy to take questions.